That's what it says in the beginning of the parsha of Tetzaveh, which you don't get to give separate attention to every year, but this year we do. So it says you'll make clothing sacred for Aaron, your brother, like a directive to Moshe Rabbeinu, and then you have these words, Kavod v'Tiferet. Now, Kavod v'Tiferet, Tiferet are very hard words, because they could mean anything. Anything you think of could be Kavod or Tiferet. And so, it makes the Pasuk very difficult. Because, after all, God directed Moshe Rabbeinu to make the clothing. And in the Chumash, there's an extensive description of what the clothing of the Kohen looks like. And in fact, if you take any of these books that they use to teach children these parashiyot, you'll see a Kohen dressed in clothing, which is very appropriate, to the It's very appropriate to what it says in the Chumash. I mean, the Chumash can be reconstructed somehow. Of course, in certain books, the Kohen Gadol looks like a Haredi in Me'er Shorim, and in other books, the Kohen Gadol looks a little more modern. But the clothing that he wears, which is based on the description in the Chumash, is pretty much the same. So what does that mean? Lechavod? Ulitiferet. I mean, what could that possibly mean? So it's a problem. I mean, as far as I can tell. So it's a problem. L'chavod ulitiferet. What possible addition to the clothing of the Kohen Gadol could the words Kavod and Tiferet describe? That's the question. Now we're going to look at two sources and come to what I think is a kind of a radical conclusion. But we'll look at these two sources carefully. The first is the Ramban. First is the Ramban, Kavod u'Tiferet. Sheyeh nechbad u'mefo'ar b'malbushim nechbadim. You should be honored and mifo'ar, you know, like rich, very rich, the clothing that you wear. B'malbushim nechbadim u'mifo'arim. Clothing that is nechbad and mifo'ar. He's talking about human terms. Even though the Ramban was a Kabbalist, and we'll see his Kabbalistic opinion later, a little further on, here he's not talking about Kabbalah. He's talking about going to spend $1,000 when you buy a dress that in another year will be sold for $100 in some, you know, lower east side shop. That's pe'er. Pe'er is valuable. K'moshe amar ha-katuv, k'chatan yichahein pe'er. The pasuk connects kohen, pe'er, chatan. Right? You know the chatan. You get married. You get all dressed up, even if you don't usually get dressed up. Ki eila habegadim. Now listen to the Ramban. Ramban, this is the same Ramban that we hear all the time. He says, "Ki eila habegadim levushei malchutu." Hey, the Ramban says there's a category of clothing called levushei malchut, the clothing, the princely clothing, the kingly clothing, right? Something like that, right? In other words, they're not. It's not religious. It's not religious clothing that we're talking about. It's not The way we imagine that the Kohen Gadol could all go into the Beit HaMikdash and he was wearing these set of clothes or the other set of clothes, we don't think about the clothes. But here the Ramban says, Eila begadim lebushei malchutu, kidmutam yilbishu hamlachim bizman haTorah. And in the time of the Torah, the kings in the world would wear this kind of clothing, princely clothing. In other words, there are clothing that sets the king apart. He's not like everybody else. He wears clothing that only he can wear. And you know that the Torah demanded that one of the strings of the tzitzit should be colored tchelet. Remember?
Mm-hmm.
Now, tchelet is a dye. That's how they did it. It was a dye. It was a dye came from a fish or something like that. Now we lost the dye. We, Am Yisrael, we didn't know how to do it anymore. All the tzitzit in the world, I mean, until very modern times, which I'll just tell you about also, until modern times, there was no tchelet. I mean, they didn't know how to do it. They figured that they should do it the way they used to do it, but they didn't know how they used to do it. They didn't know what animal it was, whether it was a snail or a mussel or on which you were able to get the dye, and there were attempts, very interesting attempts over the years to find this dye. You may have heard that the Rishonim Chassidim, the Rebbe, thought that he had found the dye in Italy or nearby Italy. You know, Italy is somehow on the Mediterranean, whatever it's called. He thought he had found it. And all the Chassidim started using his recipe for Tchelet. But eventually, it was proven to be mistaken. The Rezina Rebbe, who was a genius and learned all kinds of things, it was proven by Rav Herzog, grandfather of the guy who's running to become the next prime minister of Israel. So his grandfather was the first chief rabbi of the state of Israel. His grandfather, Rav Herzog, who was also a genius and a great Torah scholar. During World War II, I mean, all of these things, during World War II, he had nothing to do. He was in Ireland. And he had no books. Because people looking for books don't go to Ireland. He had no scoring. So he found it like he didn't know what to do with himself. So he went to the university and he did two doctorates during the war. And one of those doctorates was on royal purple. One of his doctorates. And he proved that the Radzina Rebbe was wrong. And then, interestingly enough, a group of young people who live, some in Efrat and some in Ma'ale Adumim, got together and felt that they had discovered the missing link between those little animals and the purple, because they couldn't get purple out of it. And they discovered that the sun, that the light of the sun, when it comes into contact with the juice that comes out of these little animals, these fish, they're not fish, they're like little animals, turns into purple. And that is the royal purple. And since then, they've been trying to sell everybody on this idea that Tchelet does exist, that it is discovered. I'm telling you this for a totally different reason. Why do you think, why did they lose it? I mean, how could you lose it? I mean, people making sitzes all the time. So how'd they lose this purple, the animal, the purple, the sun? How did they lose it? Apparently, it's a reasonable guess that the What's my guess? The reasonable guess is that the Romans said they passed a bull, an edict, or something like that, that no one is allowed to use royal purple. Because only the king is allowed to wear clothing with that color. So they had this set, and because of that, people stopped making tcheles for tzitzis. And eventually they forgot what it was that they were supposed to do and how to do it. And, it's rejuvenated in our time by these young people who are selling tcheles. What I meant to tell you from this story was that this notion that there are things that the king can wear that nobody else can wear has not only to do with the cloth and with the strings and with the embroidery, but it also has to do with the use of the color. You can't use royal purple if you're not the king of Rome. That was the situation. So he says, the Ramban says, second line, Kidmutam yelbishu amlachim bismana Torah. That the kings in the world would wear the kind of clothes that the Kohanim and the Kohen Gadol especially were supposed to wear. Kemosha batsinu beketonet vasalo ketonet pasim. And you remember it says ketonet, a cloak, an outer garment was made for Yosef by Yaakov as a sign of him being special. So according to the Ramban, this makes sense in the context of the people who lived at that time, the kings who lived at that time in Eretz Yisrael. Cheperusho, mirukemet kidmut pasim, like it's embroidered with lines of embroidery going down. And this was like a very special kind of... Folks, so you understand why the brothers... Why Yosef's brothers got really angry, because here, what is Yaakov saying to Yosef? You're the man. You're going to wear the special clothing. And there was no way he couldn't make it up to the other brothers by giving them also ketonet pasim, because that was exactly the point, that only somebody can wear ketonet pasim, but not everybody. And that's what v'hi ketonet hashbeitz, Kemosha Peirashti, and all these words, Tilketonet of Tashbeit, which is embroidered in squares, right? It was very, very, very special. Vil Bisho Keven Malchei Kedem. He dressed him like one of the kings of those early years. V'chein Aderech B'Me'il V'Ketonet. The same thing is true about a Me'il and a ketonet, the two outer garments. V'katuv v'alei ketonet pasim ki chein tilbashna benot ha-melech ha-besulot me'ilim. So he talks about the story of Tamar, who was the daughter of a king, and she got dressed up in the way that daughters of kings get dressed up. Right, you know, in other words, this idea that everybody wears clothing that are an indication of the team and the status within that team is something that the Ramban takes for granted. And so according to the Ramban, what does l'chavod u'teferet mean? It's not enough to have gold and silver and special kinds of ornaments on the clothing, but they have to be princely or kingly. Right? And that his explanation says that kavod and tiferet doesn't have anything to do with the Kabbalistic notion. It has just to do with the fact that there's fancy. It doesn't matter what the ingredients of the clothing are, but there's fancy and not so fancy. And we're talking about fancy. We're talking about special. That's what he's supposed to do. We saw in Tamar this ketonet pasim, it was seen and it was obvious. Ki aminhag lilgosh benot ha melech ha betulot meilim shetitalefna behem, and they would wear these kind of clothing, this outer garment that you could wrap yourself, wrap around yourself. That this ketonet pasima that she was wearing was a outer garment, the garment that you wear on top of the garment. Lachein amar veketonet pasima sher aleha kira'ah. And then, you know, she was unhappy, and she ripped up the outer garment that she was wearing. But it was the outer garment, because that was the one that you could rip up most easily, right? It was... So if I try to understand what the Ramban is saying, I think it's clear that the Ramban thought that Kavod v'Tiferet was a statement about the quality of the clothing that the Kohen Gadol had to wear. And the clothing that he had to wear could only be described as princely or kingly. But the kinds of, you can still see it in the world, you know, when Queen Elizabeth opens up Parliament, you know, she definitely wears clothing that nobody else would be interested in wearing. But it's hers. She's the only one who could wear it. No one else would dare wear the clothing that she wears when she opens the Parliament. Gideon, have I got it right? I have it right. So it's kind of surprising, isn't it? That here you have an opening, Kavod v'Tiferet. I mean, anybody could make a little something out of that. Along comes the Ramban, who is really, for many of us, the teacher of Kabbalistic ideas, the one whose Peirush on the Torah includes more Kabbalah than any other commentary. And here, he has this opening, Kavod v'Tiferet, and he says, no, that's not what we're talking about. We're talking about something else. We're talking about princely, kingly, special, unique, right? That's something that people will be able to relate to. Then he goes on, and he says, Mitznefet yudu'ah gam hayom lemelachim lusarim gedolim mitznefet. A kind of hat, right? You remember the olden times that we know about, everybody wore a hat. Nobody went with a bloisen kop, as I used to hear at home. Mitunit gain with a bloisen kop, where did that come from? You can't go out of the house with your head uncovered. It's just not proper. It's not proper, and then in modernity, we've basically done away with the hats. The only people who wear hats today are yeshiva guys. And no one else wears a hat that I know of. Anyway, so he says, the mitznefet, this hat that the Kohen wore, yuduah gam hayom lemelachim lesarim hagdolim, great kings. What?
We're looking around here.
Okay, there are some holdovers. You know, you can fall in love with your hat just like you can fall in love with anything else. But. So,
cowboys,
I mean, what?
Cowboys always wear hats.
Cowboys, yeah, but there are no cowboys anymore.
From women.
No, you can't buy a hat at a non-religious, like a fedora, what they used to call a fedora, a regular hat. You can't buy them. You have to come to Israel to buy a hat. Because this is the only place where people wear hats. I mean, there used to be a time when the President of the United States, when he was outside and being sworn into something, would always wear a hat.
Kennedy changed.
What?
Kennedy changed.
Kennedy? But he didn't change it. He went along with the group. I mean, nobody wore a hat, so he didn't wear a hat. But he changed it for the president, presidency, maybe. So anyway, lechei amar katuv b'nefol ha-malchut ha-ser ha-masnefet v'hareim ha-atarat. So the pasuk says, if the king falls, if the monarchy falls, take off your hat. Stop wearing your hat. The hat was a sign of station. And there was only one hat that the king wore. Just one hat. One hat. Yama Yomla, he's at the second line of the second paragraph, line 9. V'chein katu v'tzlif melucha, also kind of a hat that belongs to the king. V'kach yikra'ema katuv pe'rei ha-migba'ot. Okay, pe'rei ha-migba'ot, the most beautiful of the hats. Uchti pe'rei pishtim yiyu arosham. Beautiful flaxen hats will be on their heads. V'ayfod v'achoshen levus malchut. They thought of the choshen, this breastplate, and the thing which had the stones in it, you know, for the 12 tribes. He says that's levush malchut. He says the Ramban, even those things that you think were special, was something connected to the to the Kohen Gadol, especially even they are malchut. Have to do with Mevakein Yukrema. Sorry, Shein Peir. V'shevach le'machtirim b'hem. They are pe'er, beautiful, praiseworthy for those who wear them. V'ayifot v'achosh nevush malchut ke'inyan de'katuv ha'manaycha didava al tzavir. It's a pasuk of Daniel. Ha'manaycha is a breastplate. Didava, made of gold. Al tzavarech, which is hung around your neck. Right? So that's also, again, he's emphasizing the fact that Daniel, where he wasn't talking about the Kohen Gadol, he was talking about something special. He was talking about this special breastplate. But tzitz nezer amlachimu, the tzitz, right? You know the tzitz that the Kohen wore on his head under the mitznefet, right? There was a hat and there was a tzitz which was tied with ribbons. And the tzitz said Kodesh Lashem on it. So he says, so you think, there you have it, I mean, Kodesh Lashem, it can't be more obvious than that, that it's something to do with some Kabbalistic idea. So he says, but chelet, mekativ, I'm sorry, chelet ukativ, kol kvudabat melech penimo, again, you're talking about Bat Melech wearing special clothing. Ukhadiv, Argivana. Argivana is like Techele. Tilbashva, Manaycha, Didava, Al Tzavarech. Again, the same idea, another pasuk. Utchelet, Gamhayom, Lo Yarim, Ish, Et Yadol, El Vosh, Chutzmi, Melech, Hagoyim. He's talking about Chelet. And what the story that I told you, that they lost, we lost the chelet because it became forbidden. You weren't allowed to wear any clothing colored with the color of chelet, except for the king, of course, Uktiv. Mordechai yatzav lifnei hamelech belevush malchut, right? Next week. Mordechai yatzav. מלפני המלך בלבוש מלכות תחלת וחור והתרץ האב גדולה ותחיל קבוץ והגמן. I'm explaining every word, you understand that there was something called the Bush Malchut, that everybody knew it, that when Mordechai appeared, we knew that Mordechai had usurped the position of Haman, which apparently was the idea that pasuk, that was Achashverosh, he preempted the sad end of Haman. Okay? V'atachrich hu ame'il shi'atepo. So here's the Ramban. Two-thirds of this Ramban, he devoted to telling us that nothing is nothing special about the words kavod and teferet, and who will be able to explain to you what kavod and teferet are? Goyim. The Goyim have kings, whereas the Jews in the desert, did not have any kings, if you remember, had Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had the function of a king, but he wasn't a king because his children did not become kings. And the nature of kingship is that it stays in the family. Whereas Moshe Rabbeinu lost out. He acted as the king. He was in charge, but he was not able to be the official king of Israel. So there you have it. That's the Ramban. Now, finally, the Rabban gets to Al Derech HaEmet, which is the way he introduces Kabbalistic ideas. Al Derech HaEmet, Lechavod of Tiferet, Yomar, Sheyasu Begdei Kodesh La'aron, L'sharet Ba'em Lechavod Hashem, HaShochem B'tocham, U'leTiferet Uzam. Oh, thankfully. He says there's another level of interpretation for these words, Kavod and Tiferet. And what is that? Big Day Kodesh La'aron, the Sharet Ba'em, Lechvod Hashem, in order to have honor, to give proper honor to God. I mean, after all, where is the Kohen Gadol going to go? Into the Beit HaMikdash. What's in the Beit HaMikdash? The presence of God. So when you go to the presence of God, it has to be Lechavod. Uletiferet Uzam. Uzam is strength, the power. And you're in this situation, we'll see, of Yira, of fear of God in the Beit HaMikdash. Tiferet Uzam. Kirechtiv, ki tiferet Uzam u'ata. Uchtiv, Beit kachenu v'tifarteinu, asher halalucha avoteinu. V'kachenu, v'akavod v'tifarteinu, tiferet Yisrael. Okay, so I don't want to go into this. I'm more interested in the other side of the Ramban. The Ramban says, look, there's this idea that you have to be the best. You have to have the best clothing. And to have the best clothing, it's not enough to follow the directive of the Torah itself, but you have to know what it is that the best is. And the way you could know that is by looking at the goyim, how they treat their kings and what they think princely clothing is. An idea which I think is very odd. Very odd. So now I want to learn a little bit of the Mesilat Yesharim, which is printed on this side of the page in Hebrew and the other side of the page in English. So if you want, you can look at the English and I'll read the Hebrew. Is that alright? And I'm not sure that that's the best teaching strategy, but it's better for me. V'inei dibarnu ad ata min ha'achna'a min ha'boshet, v'nidaber ata mi'inyan ha'kavod. So the Mesilat Yesharim, Rav Moshe Chaim Lutzato, who had a very important place in modern until Jewish intellectual history, and he wrote many, many books of interest. And he, of course, in the manner of other great Jews, he died at a very young age near Akko, where he is. He's buried. He died, his wife died, I think his children died. There was some kind of a plague, you know, at that time. People got sick. I mean, he was very interesting person, who was in and out of Cheirim at different times, and, was able to write a book called the Mesilat Yesharim, which is read and learned by all the Orthodox Jews and the non-Orthodox Jews. Everybody learns the book. In other words, Litvaks, like yeshiva guys, they learn the Mesilas Yesharim. Hasidim also learn the Mesilas Yesharim. And less religious Jews, conservative, reform, they also learn the Mesilas Yesharim. The first, and probably maybe even today, the best translation into English of the Mesilas Yesharim was done by Mordechai Kaplan, who, as you know, Aryeh Kaplan. I said Mordechai Kaplan. Who's Aryeh Kaplan? He's another frum guy, and he didn't translate the Mesilat Yesharim. But Mordechai Kaplan, who is well known for his
reconstruction,
yeah, like the head of the, he became Reconstruction. What?
Reconstruction.
He was the head of this idea, of the Reconstructionist, the Reconstructionist movement. But he also translated this Mesilat Yesharim into English, which means that here's a person who didn't believe exactly in orthodoxy, in the way that most Orthodox Jews believe in it, thought that the book called Mesilat Yesharim was a very important book, and he wanted to make it available to people who didn't know Hebrew. So look at what the Mesilat Yesharim said. The Mesilat Yesharim talks about Avodah, serving God, in the 19th chapter. And he says that there are two major branches to this idea of serving God. One is called Yirat Hashem, and the other is called Avat Hashem. Chapter 19, fear of God and love of God. And then he says, fear of God is further divided into three branches. Three branches. And those three branches are hachna'a, like to have humility, boshet is embarrassment, and the third is kavod. So humility and busha, humility and busha, I understand, are things that are generated by the fact that I have fear of God. So that when I stand before God in fear of God, these notions start directing my actions. Right? These notions, humility and embarrassment. I'm standing there. I mean, I can't say what I want to say. I can't do what I want to do. I mean, I'm standing before God. The third is called kavod in the language of the Mesilat Yesharim, honor. What does that mean? He says, "Hinei kavod ha-mitzvah v'yikara." That you have to give kavod to the mitzvahs that you do and honor them. Kfar hizhirunu alav chazal v'amru. Chazal have already said, "Zekeli vadveyu." Remember, Shirat Hayam, "Zekeli, ze." Ze means
pointing,
right? A eidetic particle. That's what they call it, right? Ze. So in Kabbalah, in the Kabbalah, ze became a very important word because it meant you could see beyond. Like when you point at something, that the person standing next to you probably doesn't see it. That's why you're pointing. But it also means that you see something that they don't see. Zeh. Keli, I see God. I see my God. V'anveyu, and I will beautify him. That Chazal looked at that pasuk and they say, Hitna'el fanav b'mitzvot. Do the mitzvah in a pleasant, in a nice, in a mechubad manner. So tzitzit na'eh, you should have nice tzitzis, nice tefillin, sefer Torah na'eh, tulav na'eh, v'chein amru hidu mitzvah, tzlich. And there's another source in Chazal, where they said, how much should you pay to accomplish this mitzvah called hidur, beautifying something? He said, that's shlish, the Gemara says. If the standard price for an etrog is X, so you should pay X plus one-third X. Right? Actually, not more than that. You have to give away everything you own to do the mitzvah, but you have to kind of indicate that that you want to do it better. You want to be zekei livadveyu. You want to beautify the mitzvah, and you're willing to spend money to do it. Ad kad mishalom. Up to a third, you could say, I'm giving it. But more than a third, that belongs to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and you don't get any credit for that. Harei dat siftoteyem zal barur milelu, the Chachamim spoke clearly, she'ein dai ba'asot ha-mitzvah levad, ela tzirich lechabda ulahadra. So here the Mesilat Yesharim says, it's not enough to do the minimum. It's not enough to do the mitzvah, like you take the Shulchan Aruch and you say, you know, like, you have this and you have that and you have that thing. You're going to make a your Purim, like you're going to have a Seuda, you have wine, and you drink, and you do whatever you do. He says, that's not good enough. All the mitzvot of Purim, including the Shalach Manos and the Matanos Labyonim, all of those mitzvot have to be done in a beautiful way. People have to notice it. They have to notice. This is the Messiah Tisharim. And then he goes on and he says, Ulotzi mimi shelahakel alatzmo yomar eina kavod elav ne'adam amitpatim ba'avlehem eile. So in other words, he's saying that some people are litvaks. No litvaks. They just do what you're supposed to do. They're going to do more than you're supposed to do. They don't like that. So he says, there are people like that. There are people that certainly come to the Hadra, somebody comes along and wants to do the mitzvah in an easier way, in a simpler way. Says, I'm not going to join these fools who are just adding, like a litvak would say, why do you need a nice container? Like a container for a lulav, a container for the matzah, a container for the challah, right, that you have on the table. Why do you need a nice one? It's a functional question, isn't it? I mean, you want to have a place to put the lulav, so you put it someplace. What's the difference if you come to shul with a cardboard box, or you come with a silver, gold inlaid box that obviously cost a tremendous amount of money? So what's the difference? So the Masechta Yesharim is of the opinion that it makes a difference. It makes a difference, even though personally I find it difficult to agree. But that's what he says. In the Kra El Hakavod. He uses very strong language. If a person could do something more beautifully, nicer, in a special way, you should do that. You should do that. That's kavod for the mitzvah. You should not be a minimalist in this area. You should go for the whole ball of wax. Yisrael, etc., etc. Okay, let's skip to the last paragraph. And you remember the story of Kayin Vehevel, he says. Hevel. He brought from the best of the sheep that he had, the Kayin. He says, Kayin, he just brought junk. He said, what does God need for fancy fruits and fancy? He brought the junk. What happened to them? That God approved of Hevel. But not Kayin. Skip this. This is a digression. But the next line. If you hold a Sefer Torah and it's naked, like you take off the dress of the Sefer Torah, he says Sefer Torah Arum Nekbar Arum Mevnei Bizui Mitzvah. So this is called Bizui Mitzvah, and this is something that you have to avoid, and you have to make sure that that Sefer Torah, that's what they say, is dressed properly, and that dress is something that is special. So that's the arur. Kol ochei sefer Torah arum nikbar arum ibnei bizui mitzvah v'seder ha'ala'at bikurim sheyeh lado le'einayim lirot mahu hiduran shel mitzvot. They said, you know, when they brought the bikurim in Yerushalayim, we have learned a lesson about Hidur Mitzvah. This is the Mishnah. The Mishnah says, Shekach Shaninu Bikurim Perigimel, Ashor Olech Lifnehem Bekainam Bitzupot Zahav. The ox goes first, and his horns are covered with gold. Vatarashel Zayin Berosho, and he has this crown of Zayit on his head. Otsham Ha'ashirim Mevi'im Bikureim Bekalatot Shel Zahav. The rich people would follow with golden dishes on which the bikurim would be placed, and lerod mahu hidur. I'm sorry. Right, od shaba ashirim meviyim bikurim bekalatot shel zahav aniyim. The poor people, b'salei b'tzarim b'chule. Okay, so this is the Mesilat Yesharim. I want to summarize the Mesilat Yesharim. Summary is that you have to beautify the mitzvah. You have to beautify the mitzvah. And I would ask the Mesilat Yesharim, who was written several hundred years after the Ramban, what the Mesilat Yesharim does not teach me is how do I know what beautifying a mitzvah is? I know, in the cases that he quoted, that in the olden times, in the time of the Mishnah, adding gold was very meaningful to them, to those people. Spending a little more money was very meaningful to those people. But I'm not sure that that holds water today. That if you just smear gold on something, that you've done the Hidur Mitzvah. I think the standards of Hidur Mitzvah today are much higher. And much higher, and it means that you have to develop. It seems to me that the Ramban and the Mesilat Yesharim indicate that in order to do a mitzvah properly, it has to have Hidur. It has to be especially appointed. It has to be something that people recognize. They recognize in you the need to beautify the mitzvah. And beauty, as you know, is a topic in modern day philosophy. Like, what is beautiful? And what is not? If you leave the Scottish Highlands, where else are you going to find this beauty that we are talking about? So it would seem that if I ask the, it seems to me, that if I ask the Mesilat Yesharim the question, he would say, the Ramban is not enough. It's true that in those days, beauty had certain very limited expression. Whereas today, beauty is much more profoundly, I think, expressed. Beauty is not just gold and silver, ornaments, clothing or cloth made from gold and silver threads. It's much more than that. I mean, we've been thinking about beauty for hundreds of years. And therefore, it would seem to me that either we would continue to copy the Goyim, like we'll go to, the Goyim will open up a museum and we'll go and they'll tell us why this is beautiful, why that is beautiful, or in order to get to the point, in order to be able to say this is beauty that could be applied to doing a mitzvah, unless we could do that on our own, and we would have to study aesthetics, beauty, art. It's a worthy enterprise because it enables you to create beautiful mitzvot. And a beautiful mitzvah is not just a beautiful person doing a mitzvah. But there is this incremental beauty that the Mesilat Yesharim is talking about. And even though he doesn't mention the Ramban, I'm sure, it would seem to me that the Mesilat Yesharim might have been at this time thinking about the Ramban. The Ramban was very careful to tell us that there's a practical side to Kavod and Tiferet. And we have to go out and find it. We don't have it on our own. We have to look to the people who might have it, the kings, and their entourage. But in modern times it's easier and it's harder. It's easier because there's beauty, or the assessment of beauty readily available to us. But it's harder because there's so much of it, and the study of beauty or the study of art has become something so big that it's very hard for us to follow suit. But who knows? Maybe there'll be some people who would have something to say about beautifying a mitzvah. Okay. I think I should stop coughing. Stop talking.